was very low on the radio. I mean, it was medium, but when I put it to high, it seemed like it brung it up a whole lot better, and everybody was able to hear me a whole lot better. I don't know if that, but I believe that that would help out KC2RSF. I believe his name is Steve. Hey, Steve, I believe that would help you out if you look into the menu.
In 2RQ.
Okay, Kevin, and that man's name was Tom. N2RQ, go right ahead.
Yeah, I think it comes back to something you already covered earlier. I'm on a 208 right now, and when I got this 208, it was set to narrow, or 2.5 kilohertz deviation. I had to change it to is called high, or the 5 kilohertz, and I stopped getting low audio reports. So that's a good place to start, at least on the 208. Apparently a lot of them came through preset for the narrow, sent to RQ.
That's what they use in Europe and Japan. It's 2.5 all over the world.
That sort of explains it. Thank you, Lou. So, Tom, as we see it, there's a menu in there that's going to be narrow versus wide, and you want the wide, and the manufacturer intentionally sets it up narrow, because if it's narrow and it's going to Europe or going to a narrow system in the United States, everything's hunky-dory. If it's going to a wide, you get a minor complaint about too low an audio. Whereas if they did it the other way around, if they set it up wide and you go into a narrow system, you'd be over-deviating and it would sound terrible. So to be on the conservative side, it looks like they shipped them in the narrow mode and you want to reset that menu to wide is the impression I have, Tom. KC2RSF, K2RIW in the TechNet. My name is Dick.
Okay, Dick, I really appreciate that, and I'm going to talk to my technician and ask him if he could follow through on that suggestion. Thank you so much, everybody on the net, for that advice, and I'm definitely going to follow through. It's something I always wanted to do, to boost up the audio on the mic. But I'd like to sign off, and I hope everyone stays in good spirits and especially good health. And I'm going to be on the side here, Kilo Charlie 2, Romeo, Sierra, Foxtrot. And thank you for your knowledge and the use of the repeater. Over.
Yeah, the rig you're using right now, Tom, has the right amount of audio, in my opinion. And you're probably talking about another radio. Okay. Over to you, Mel. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Okay. This is K2KEY. Yes, you... You must understand, I guess, like everybody, we have to get used to SDR, software-defined radio, basically, even though we still look at them and, you know, radios and look for that pot set. We can change the setting of that potentiometer. It really doesn't exist. So we're more into SDR radios now than ever, really. But bit by bit will be, I guess, everything will be done by... a menu, you know, all adjustments, just like has gone into, the TV sets, of course, now are all the plasma sets and everything that have changed the technology quite a bit. But the last of even the picture tube equipment, you know, television monitors, Dick, of course, you did everything by, you know, readjusting brightness, contrast, color, everything was basically going into the software. So, okay, let me see if I can find some stuff here we can talk about, over.
Software-defined radios. That was the main subject of discussion for quite a few of the talks that were given at the last microwave update that I attended, which was in Philadelphia in 2008. And as you guys may have heard me say, I asked the people present, in your opinion, what percentage of the tunable radios, the guys that use a tunable IF plus a crystal-controlled transverter in front of their radio as a method of getting to a VHF, UHF, or SHF frequency. In other words, most of those guys are using a 1296 or a 5 gig or a 10 gig transverter that translates down to something like 144 to 148 megacycles as a tunable IF. And the tunable IF radio, lots of those guys are experimenting with software-defined radios these days. And I asked those guys present in the next 5 years what percentage of the progressive microwave ham radio operators will be using software-defined radios, SDRs. And the answer came back, more than 50% of them. So it's a little bit like what happened in the 1970s when we slowly started switching over from tube-type radios to transistorized radios. In the beginning, there was some grief. The transistorized radios had smaller dynamic range, easier to overload, and had some noise blanker issues that were not quite as good. And that soon got ironed out real fast because we amateurs were voting with our pocketbook. And if the performance wasn't there, we weren't going to buy the new radios. And Southeast Asia responded real fast by making the right corrections so that the transistorized radios with synthesized local oscillators had all the performance that we wanted. And so software-defined radios are the next generation. And more and more digital signal processing is going to take place. And more and more fancy types of, let me drop, modulation techniques, like weak signal Joe Taylor, WSJT type techniques. You're going to be seeing more and more of that when it comes to data transmission, weak signal data transmission. And there's a number of experiments going on with audio compression also. So you haven't heard the end of the story. It's an evolving technology. More and more computers connected to more and more radios. Wonder if you found something in your mailbag that you think would be a good one to discuss tonight, Mel. K2KEY, KQRIW.
I found a couple interesting ones. I'm picking out ones that, you know, basically always say that stuff that's easily discussed over the air. I do respond to certain ones I feel, you know, that I can help them, you know, just with a few words. But some of the little bit more involved ones, maybe it's easier to, you know, bring them up here on the TechNet. Now, here's one of interest. I operate mostly VHF mobile, but I'd like to operate from the home QTH at times. Can I take my mobile antenna and put it out on my little patio deck, which is on the 10th floor, and get another mobile whip like that and put them back to back so that I could use it sort of as a dipole, rotary dipole configuration? The antenna works quite well as a mobile antenna, but I've tried it many different ways to work it from the home QTH, where it seems like it don't perform well, but I was thinking possibly adding the other half of the antenna as another mobile whip similar. Would that cure my problems and make it workable? What do you think? Put two mobile whips back to back, Dick, over.
If they're each a quarter wave ground plane type mag mount mobile radio, and you put a pair of them back to back, yes, that will work. And now you've got two feed lines coming out, and how you arrange those, you'd like to feed half the power into each one and feed them exactly 180 degrees out of phase to really create a dipole. So feeding it and setting it up mechanically, doable, but a little bit difficult. There's a couple of easier approaches, in my opinion. One would be to, if you're a builder, build a J-pole antenna. A J-pole is a kind of half-wave antenna with a slightly more elaborate feeding mechanism at the bottom. That mounted on the railing of a balcony of a apartment building has in the past worked like a charm. Any kind of half-wave radiator fed at the bottom with the right kind of impedance matching device works very well. Doesn't require an elaborate ground plane. That's one approach. Another approach would be to get a relatively large sheet of metal, a couple of feet square, lay it on the table, on the floor, or whatever, of the patio, and put the mag mount in the middle of it. And whether or not the mag mount is sticking to it, you can put a piece of steel on the bottom so that the magnet gets something to stick to. as long as the ground plane is similar in size, a little bit smaller, than the sheet metal of the roof of the car, you'll get the same performance on the current quarter wave ground plane mounted on the balcony. That's another approach. Or go out and buy a real vertical antenna made for balcony work, or buy a half wave or 5/8 wave. The half wave or 5/8 wave ground plane antenna works very well with an extremely small ground plane, extremely small counterpoise. And in that case, the railing, the safety railing, might be more than enough. But the safety railing at the bottom of a mag mount antenna that is only a quarter wave long is not adequate. And the antenna quite often will give you a fairly high standing wave ratio and a more complicated radiated pattern than you'd like. So there's a couple of approaches there. The antenna that you put on the balcony
repeater, timeout.
The antenna you put on the balcony of a apartment building, there's a lot of antennas properly researched that can be homebrewed, built out of coat hanger wire, built out of SO239 connectors and coat hanger wire, or 14-gauge household wire. There's a lot of various kinds of antennas that can be constructed fairly inexpensively or purchased. But to just take a quarter wave mag mount from a car and mount it on the balcony, that will, in some cases, give you somewhat poor performance. The back-to-back quarter wave pair of ground planes is a little bit more elaborate. It'll work, but feeding it properly and setting it up is a little bit more elaborate. I don't think you've got to go there. Back to you, Mel. K2KEY, K2RIW.
N2RSO with a comment.
Will you with a solution and comment?
Okay, N2RSO first, and then Howie in that order. Mr. RSO, go right ahead.
Good evening, Dick. Yeah, this is Frank, N2RSO. Curious to know if you or anyone else on the net have seen the latest issue of QST, where they show a homebrew project, and you can take your pick of either 2 meter, 70 centimeter, or 220, a coaxial antenna. Has the same gain and basic characteristics as a J-pole, but it's shorter, and I envision this thing on somebody's balcony. Matter of fact, one of the members of my One Tour Radio Club built one, brought it into the meeting on Friday night, and it consists of a length of 3/4 inch copper plumbing pipe, a length of an old whip antenna cut to the correct frequency or band, and a few electrical lamp parts. Very easy to make. Get all your parts from Home Depot or Lowe's, and looks like a very effective or efficient and efficient antenna. Back to Ned and to ours.
If I understand you correctly, Frank, is that in the September issue of QST Magazine? And is that one of the lead articles for construction of that antenna? Go ahead.
Yeah, I believe so. It's either August or September. I'm not sure which. You can't miss it. Go through the contents, and it'll show you how to build a coaxial antenna.
So there's lots of articles. I'll bet you if you did a web search, you'd also find quite a few articles. And antennas are where we shine. By that I mean the materials are not expensive. Building it is not too difficult. It can be done with hand tools. It doesn't require a machine shop. And if at first it doesn't work, it's not going to explode. It's not going to catch on fire. Modern day radios are self-protected even if you get a high standing wave ratio. So it can't do any damage. So these can be fun type projects. And you can save an awful lot of money by building your own. I bet you built a number of J-pole-like antennas in your time, Mel. K2KEY, K2RIW. Oh, stand by. Howie wants to make a comment. Howie, go ahead.
Okay, Dick. One of the things that I do know that a lot of these mobile antennas are high-gain antennas, Some of them are, you know, 6 dB. They have a very narrow angle. My suggestion is that they can put up something like a Diamond X30, which is a 3 or 4 foot antenna that will allow them to use, has very short radials, like a Diamond X30. You mount it vertical, it's like 3 dB on 2 and 4 dB on 440. That would work pretty well. Something like a Diamond X30. They even have a little bit more height. They can go to a Diamond X50. Dick, go ahead.
So if the guy is not willing to build, and he's willing to write a check, the Diamond is a rather nice product. What's roughly the dollar value of each one of those, Howie?
Yeah, you can buy the Diamond X30 for $59.95, $60, and the Diamond X50 for probably $99. And I would go for the Diamond X30. I go for the lower gain antenna because the lower the gain, the wider the angle of radiation, the less complicated the pattern is. A lot of guys try to go for the highest gain antenna, even in the mobile, and then they bring it to the house, they don't realize it. The pattern and the tuning is very critical. So I would go for the cheaper antenna, Dick, with the lower gain, so you don't have as much of a complicated pattern.
To RSO with a correction.
Okay, so $60 will do it. Go ahead, Frank.
Yeah, I stand corrected on that QST. It was July, and it's the one with a sailboat on the cover, and the article is on page 33.
Okay, page 33, July issue. Thank you, Frank. So, you can either build or buy. $60 or $100 buys the Diamond, two different versions that Howie was talking about, and I'll bet you $10 worth of materials will allow you to build it. And if you enjoy building things and you get pride out of doing it, that's got a lot to go for it. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Roger, everyone. KEY, yeah. Got plenty of copper pipe together, my time. Going way back to the days when 2 meters basically was more of an oddity back in the, back in the 50s when I first got on to 2 meters. Of course, AM, mostly local people would get together at night and convert similar to what we do now, but no repeater activity at the time, of course. So the J-pole was a somewhat straightforward antenna for putting together for 2 meters. And of course, a lot of those days, of course, rig of choice with the people that had a few bucks was the Gonson communicator. And the rest of us were surplus. Mine was a Mark, what was it, Mark 22, I believe they called it, yeah, Mark series. It was a tank radio. And it was a tank radio, built like a tank, and you could you could drive your car, or you could rest, I guess, a tank on end, elevate a tank with one of those radios. Quite a piece of machinery. All right, let's see, shall we continue? Got another one that's somewhat similar, Dick, over.
Yeah, someone else signed in. Who was that?
November 1, Delta Radio Sierra.
November 1, Delta Radio Sierra. A little bit noisy, but I'm hearing you. Thought of your name and your question or comment, sir. My name is Dick.
Hi, good evening. The name here is David. I'm located here 15 miles south of Boston. I'm running a Chriscraft 13B about 10 feet off the ground. And pretty sure we got some lifts going on tonight. And you guys are coming down here very strong. Nice to you.
Very fine, David. Yeah, that's quite a long haul. Last night there also was a bit of a band opening. And we were hearing WA1 Victor Hotel, who's, I believe, in your backyard, also coming through on this repeater. And Harry was coming through pretty good, David. I wonder if you heard him on tonight. Back to you, David.
I just happened to turn the radio on, and the beam pointed southwest, and just happened to hit it on scan and picked you guys up and been listening for a little bit. Wasn't sure if I could chime in. Great conversation. Good listening. It's pretty quiet around my parts here. We get a little traffic net here and there, but usually it's pretty quiet on 2 meters.
Yeah, according to Harry, there is another 2 meter repeater in your neighborhood. When it comes on, you're not going to hear this one. What you're listening to is something called a technical net. It meets every Sunday night on this repeater, starting at 8 o'clock, and we stop at close to midnight, and it has been going on for 27 years. We began in 1982, and Mel and I have been carrying it on now for an awful long time. This is TechNet number 1258. So these guys get together down here in the New York City area every Sunday night for the last 27 years. But you get a kick out of that, David. And there's a way you can sign into this TechNet whenever you want to by way of EchoLink and IRLP. And there's also a website in which you can listen to all of the past conversations that we've had by going to www.amateurradio.tangovictor. Amateurradio.tangovictor. And you can listen to all the past, at least 10 years worth, I think it is. Alrighty, back to you, Mel. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Thank you.
There was another station in there, very weak, and I heard CQ. That's the all that came through. Want to give it another try?
Yeah, QSL, the call here is November 1, Whiskey Charlie Oscar, in 1WCO, Wareham, Massachusetts.
November 1, Whiskey Blank Oscar. You're coming through a little bit noisy, but the band opening is bringing you through very well. Go ahead. My name is Dick, K2 Romeo, India Whiskey.
Okay, very good, Dick. I just want to jump in and say good evening to everybody. I'm going to pull the plug pretty soon. Just want to jump in and say hi to everybody, especially that David there. I don't know where he is, but he's close to me anyway. I'm over here near the gateway to Cape Cod.
Okay. What was the middle letter of your call? It was November 1, Whiskey Blank Oscar. What was the middle letter?
Sorry about that. The call is November 1, Whiskey Charlie, as in C, Oscar, N1WCO.
Okay, I would call it November 1 Whiskey Charlie Oscar. Sound like you said Cali, which is an unusual phonetic. That's why I didn't recognize it. Whiskey Charlie Oscar. Okay, nice meeting you, sir. Back to you, Mel, K2KEY, K2RIW.
Okay, this is K2KEY. All right, very good. You want to hear another one? A similar question, you know. I guess there's a lot of things on the market, Dick, that I'm not really up on, so I guess we'll just try to pick through some of these things. Would you like to hear this one, Dick? Over.
The choice is yours, Mel. You be the judge as to what you think is the most general subject of interest.
Okay, now we'll try this. There's a antenna that is marketed for portable use called the Buddy Pole, B-U-D-D-I-P-O-L-E. I guess I spelled it correctly, according to this. The Buddy Pole. And the question is it basically two mobile whips, again, mobile whips, two mobile whips that are back-to-back that cover the HF and 2 meter band? And is that basically what they are marketing? Are you familiar at all with this antenna, Dick? Over.
I'm somewhat familiar with it, actually.
I just did a Google search on Buddy Pole, B-U-D-D-I-P-O-L-E, and I'm looking at it right now. And what little I see, it looks like an antenna intended for mountain-topping operations. Very, very portable. Looks like it comes apart in pieces for transport. Let's see what Rich has to say about it. Have you ever used one of these, Rich, N2EO, K2RIW?
No, I considered one portable at one time, Dick. You know who used to use that? With Norman, K2YEW used to
use one of those. It's basically a halfway dipole that can be telescoped to different frequencies, half waves. It can be run as an inverted V. It can be run as a regular V. It can be run as a dipole. It sits on a tripod. You can adjust the arms. You can run it as an L. But it's basically a dipole, and it breaks down into little pieces. So you can put it, I think they give you a little sack that it backs into. It's mainly used with something like a Yaesu ST817, you know, portable rig. Like I say, Norman used to use one of those.
I'm on the website right now. I see that it's got loading coils. It's got telescoping rods on the left and right side of the dipole. The specification says that when it's collapsed, it's 22 inches long. When it is length extended, it is 16 feet long. Good for 250 watts. Claims less than 2 pounds. Wow. Coil diameter a little less than 2 inches. Frequency coverage 40 meters to 54 megahertz inclusive. Oh. 7 to 54 megahertz continuous plus 144 to 148. Huh. That's quite a lot of antenna for $199. In the picture, it's shown on a tripod. And whether or not the tripod comes with it is not completely clear yet, but as I read more, it's a fairly attractive-looking device. And yes, Norm, K2 Yankee, Echo Whiskey, young, eager, and willing on this repeater, apparently used that for quite a long period of time. He was a guy that liked to travel to various places with antennas and do QRP work. So, kind of an attractive-looking antenna. Back to you, Mel. And the website gives you a lot of information if you just Google BUDDIPOLE. K2KEY, K2LIW.
Comment and to RSO.
Go ahead, Frank.
Yeah, Dick, I'm also familiar with that antenna. Another member of the Wantua Club owns one, and he has been extolling the virtues of this antenna for years. Great for QRP as well as regular operation. The name, by the way, Buddy Pole, comes from the inventor's first name, which is Bud, B-U-D-D, last name Drummond, I believe his call sign is N3FF, and he makes a very well-made product. About 2 years ago, I bought his two telescoping elements, and I expected to get something similar to what you can buy at Radio Shack, and I was pleasantly surprised. They were very heavy-duty, extended out to a very long length, and very happy with them. I used them for another project that I was working on. But I would say, the other nice thing, he has a second website. I don't know if he still has it running. But if you don't want to spend the money, he'll show you how to build your own Buddy Pole from scratch. Back to Ned and to RSO.
Good information, Frank, and thank you. Attractive-looking product. Looks like a fun thing to own. And to homebrew it is definitely doable if you're sufficiently enthusiastic. Back to you, Mel, K2KEY. Looks like the crowd likes that antenna, K2RIW.
Yeah, Roger, I just had the XYL. She's sitting here with a laptop, and I asked her, please, just bring it up for a second, because you got wet my appetite here. Always, you know, interested in some new type of antenna product. And, yeah, I could see. Now, let's put it to you that it looks like, from what I see in a picture, like you say, a dipole that has a flexible joint in the middle. If you took two mobile whips, let's say I'm very familiar with the Neutronics Hustler whip with the top-loading coil. If you took it, you know, it's a pipe, basically, a very stiff pipe. And if you took two of them and actually put it into that kind of configuration and set it in the middle, I would assume how they're doing this, what I can see here. Well, I guess you could have basically the same idea of working. Am I correct, Dick? Over.
Yes, but what I see when you go to his second page of his website, it looks to me like the half of the dipole to the left and to the right are telescoping whip-like devices, plus he's got a loading coil, and it looks like you can tap the loading coil at various positions. So the combination of the tappable loading coil and the whips that can be extended and contracted gives you two advantages. Number one, it collapses to 22 inches. Number two, it extends all the way out to 16 feet and operates all the way down to 40 meters by way of the loading coil. It acts like it is a half wavelength on 40 meters would be 64 feet. So by way of the loading coil, the 16 feet acts like 40. So the combination of the tappable loading coil and the extendable contracting whips makes it both compact for transport and very tunable. So he's got continuous tune capability from 7 to 54 megs, and then he can also cover 144 to 148. So he's got a couple of extra pieces of capability there that you'd want to add that tappable loading coil and the extendable whips to get all of that coverage if that's what you wanted now. So therefore, you're going to be buying whip antennas that telescope, I think, if you want to construct this capability. Either that, or you're going to have a whole lot of individual whips at various lengths, depending on what band you're on. But for having the telescoping whips looks to me like it's one way of squeezing a whole lot of individual bands of antenna into one structure. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Okay, you brought up something very interesting because, you know, I thought about one of these type of devices at one time some years back, but really never pursued it. But what I was thinking of, basically what just jumped into mind, I have on my mobile, my HF antenna is a mobile, the hustle whip. You do have to fold it over to screw on a coil for a different band. It's a monoband antenna, but works extremely well. I always accounted for that because of it has the coil up on top-loaded, basically. And I was saying to myself, gee, you know, a lot of times you go to the park and all, and I drag along some other kind of dipole or whatever. Maybe if I had I got a second hustle whip, but I don't have the coil for like, say, 20 meters. If I was to get another coil and come up with some kind of method of joining them in a dipole configuration, I would guess, I never thought of that. I'd be using, two mobile whips in a horizontal position, Dick. What do you think of that, over?
Many people use ham sticks for that same effect. Matt, no. And to RSO.
Very fine, Frank. Now, your major motivation, as I see it, Mel, you've already got vertical antennas mounted on your automobile that when you put on the right loading coil and or the right whip, gives you the right band you want with vertical polarization. For you to build a pair of those back-to-back to get horizontal polarization, your major motivation there would be assuming that horizontal is better. I see a little bit of a problem. In the case of horizontal polarization at some reasonably low distance off the ground, you're going to have, because of the ground reflection being 180 degrees out of phase for horizontal polarization, you're going to have a fairly high main lobe vertical angle of radiation. Your vertical main lobe is going to be, numbers like 30 degrees up off the ground. Whereas with a vertical antenna, even mounted on an automobile, and most people think automobile antennas are not so great on efficiency, the fact that it's vertically polarized does give you a lot more energy on the horizon for DX work, as I see it. Bear in mind also that no matter whether you start off with a horizontal or vertical transmitting signal, once you get out of your near field range, your ground range, and you're really reflecting off that ionosphere, we all forget about the fact that Faraday rotation, the fact that the ionosphere is a plasma, that plasma has a magnetic field from the Earth mixed into it. Therefore, when you're operating DX from your automobile, from your vertical antenna, that vertically polarized transmitted signal is probably being rotated three or four times before it arrives at your buddy's house in London when you're talking to him, and it arrives horizontally polarized when he gets there. So what polarization you launch with has no great magic to it when you're using HF ionospheric polarization. Mother Nature is going to rotate it for you randomly depending on the state of the magnetic field. Let me drop. And the state of the ionosphere for that particular hour of that particular day. Therefore, as I see it, your highest requirement is to put as much signal on the horizon as you can get. That, in my mind, would favor vertical over horizontal, and therefore the mobile mount vertical could outperform a tripod mounted horizontal. The nice thing about this tripod mounted horizontal is it carries its own counterpoise. See, for you to carry a counterpoise with you up on top of the mountain is a little bit difficult, and therefore you go to this tripod mounted horizontal thing. But for an installation that's already on that great big counterpoise called automobile and launches a vertical signal, it is my guess that if you did a shootout, you would find in many cases vertical would be superior to horizontal. Now that's a bunch of opinions based on what I know about antenna patterns and vertical angle of takeoff, because a vertically polarized signal doesn't reverse in polarity when it reflects off the ground like horizontal does. But I'm not an HF person. You are. And you guys from the Kings County Radio Club have done some of these shootouts. I wonder if during any of those shootouts you ever had the ability to compare a low altitude horizontal to a low altitude vertical. I think you'd find the low altitude vertical would behave quite a bit better. Now, when you guys set up your field day site at the Ryan Visitor Center at Floyd Bennett Field, there your horizontal dipole is a good distance off the ground using the control tower that used to be on that airport, and that's a different situation. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Well, I was thinking of, like portable operations, just like I think somebody, Frank, would just mention that the ham sticks, they're using them in this type of configuration for portable use. Why I brought this up, because we do get together in a park. Now, in the past years in the park, I would bring along like a 20-meter dipole, wire dipole, and string it up in the tree. Just can't use a bow and arrow to launch it. You can't use a slingshot. So what I used to do, I have this rubber ball with a string on it, and I just throw it up over a branch, and just string up a dipole. No more. You cannot touch the trees in a park in any form. I guess some people started abusing some of the things that they were doing with the trees in the park, so they've really gotten very strict now. So you can't use that trees in any way for support in the park, say where we go. Now, I'm not talking about the Floyd Bennett. That's a different situation, of course. Like you said, we have plenty of height there with the buildings and all. But generally in the park where we go get together. We have our outings. Now, to put a vertical up, you got to spread out radio, and that's a trip hazard. So that, again, ruled out. So I see this buddy pole. So I'm saying to myself, rather than go purchase something like this that I would seldom, use, can I take my mobile whip and just put another mobile whip together in some kind of a configuration like this and simply have some kind of a horizontal antenna? That's what I've been thinking, Dick, over.
I see what you're thinking, and it's an approach. However, if you make your vertically polarized radiator a half wave, not a quarter wave, electronically, by way of loading coils and meanders and spiral winding or whatever, there's a zillion ways you can make the vertical radiator half wave electronic. Once you do that, and you feed it from the bottom, where the impedance for loading is now 1,000 ohms instead of 70, you can get away with almost zero ground plane radial smell. One ground plane, one spike in the ground as a grounding rod would do it, or connected to the automobile as the grounded end would do it. Once you accept the huge advantage of a half-wave electronic radiator, vertically polarized, fed from the bottom by way of a J-pole arrangement, which is an impedance step-up, or a loading coil for impedance step-up, similar to what's inside of a 5/8 wave mag mount for 2 meters, with that approach, you don't need all those ground plane radials. Yeah, I can see now, in modern day parks, you're not allowed to touch the trees, and I guess in the five boroughs of New York City, it's illegal to use a slingshot or a bow and arrow. So therefore, except for throwing a beanbag up in a tree, and unless Arnold Schwarzenegger is doing it, it's hard to get enough altitude if you're allowed to use the trees. So nowadays, I don't think we have given anywhere near enough trial to a electronic half-wave vertical thing and various ways of building a portable version of that. The average guy doesn't realize what a huge advantage there is when the vertical radiator is electronically half-wave as opposed to electronically quarter-wave. The electronically quarter-wave requires a zillion ground plane radials if you want high efficiency. The half-wave does not. So that's another thing worth considering now. And again, vertical is going to give you a lot more energy on the horizon, I believe. K2KEY, K2RIW. Rich recognized with Mel first. Go ahead, Mel.
Okay, no, because, you know, at the time it's a quick setup. We go to the park, and for a few hours we have a picnic with the group, and so something quick to set up. So, yes, like you say, putting something together like that, making it collapsible and all, bit of a project for a few hours of use, but I just thought that, you know, I got the Mobile Whip on there, and I have a second one, exactly the same antenna. I don't have a second loading coil, for instance, for 20 meters, but that's easily obtained. So that would easily, you know, sit in the trunk of the car, and I figured if I could take that out, you know, put it just back-to-back real quick with a type of makeshift type of arrangement in the middle there, maybe a simple type of tripod sensor support, similar to what they show in that buddy pole, that basically I'd come up with basically the same idea as the buddy pole type of configuration. But I understand now if there is a number of people that have already been there and done the same thing with other mobile lifts, such as the hamstick, at least that's what somebody just mentioned. So I just was going to throw that out, but like I say, it's a problem in the park right now, the parks and all. You've got to be very careful what you're doing. They don't allow you to bring any generators or anything like that. And I could say no slingshots and things. I was able to get the dipole up pretty good. I mean, I was able to throw that ball up at least 30, 40 feet up over a branch and pull up the antenna, so that wasn't a problem. Okay, pick up, Rich, and then we'll go on. This is K2KEY.
With the current New York City rules in a park, if I had a long piece of monofilament line connected to, well, could I bring a fishing rod with a monofilament, with a fly casting reel and a sinker on the end of it and throw that over a tree branch if I was allowed to use a tree branch? Would that be a legal piece of hardware in a park? And correspondingly, could I use a fly fishing reel, the kind of reels that where the string comes off the end of the roll, if you know what I mean, with monofilament line and a sinker or bean bag, and I threw that up in a tree. Would that piece of hardware be allowed in a park, to your knowledge, Mel? Go ahead.
Well, it depends on what park you're going into. If you're walking into a park with a fishing rod and there's no fishing, they're gonna look at you cross-eyed right away and say, "What are you up to?" But what I used, I had a tennis ball basically just a tennis ball where I had a monofilament tied on to the tennis ball, and I would just toss that tennis ball, give it a good throw, and it'd go up easily over, you know, a branch in the park, and pull up one end of the dipole, go down, you know, a distance, and repeat the process, and have my dipole pulled up there with the feed line connected on there real quick, quick and dirty. It worked quite well, being most of the time we were down by the ocean here, right here near me, where we have our outings, and it was great. But now they've really made it very strict. You don't throw hook or any way, shoot or anything like that. Nothing. Don't touch the trees. Just sit and look at them, Dick. Over.
Since that park is by the ocean, assuming I was allowed to touch the trees, you're not allowed to, but if I was allowed to touch the trees and that park is by the ocean, would I still be suspicious if I walked into that park with a fishing rod? And even if that is true, there are various kinds of fishing rods I can buy where they collapse into a very small package. Now back to you, Mel.
Oh, the park by me is fishing. They permit fishing in the back and the rear. There is a fishing area that is permitted to fish there. But I can say, if you walked over there with a fishing rod that way, nobody would say boom. But if you then went over and started fooling around, you know, and throwing things up over the trees, then I think they come pretty quick and spot you. I see them giving tickets for all kinds of infringements now. It's not like it was years ago where it was more of a, you know, an easier going situation. Now, if you're barbecuing in the wrong area, it's all posted, no barbecuing in certain areas, and they got there's no more loud music. You can't have they checking the cups and comps. We're going back and forth looking for people with cans of beer. Now, there's no beer or booze or anything like that permitted in the park now. So it's pretty nice for a family to go there because it's, you know, very peaceful, as they say. But it has a lot of restrictions over.
Okay. Am I allowed to fly a kite in that park? If I can fly a kite, boy, that gives me all kinds of antenna capability. Go ahead.
At certain times, yes, you can fly a kite. I see you with flying kites there. If it's a little kid with a kite, you know, really, I don't think they seem to bother too much. But the kite flying is not when, for instance, today, the beach was really packed with people because the parking lot is one of the few parking lots, beaches around with parking lots. So they filled the parking lot up, they closed it, and no more cars going to the parking lot, so the beach was really packed with people. And you could not fly a kite today, Dick, over.
Okay, that's too bad. Norm used to use kites to set up antennas on frequencies like 160 meters at a beachfront. Rich, I know you want to make a comment. I think there's another person after you. N2EO, go right ahead.
Okay, Dick, you were bringing up the virtues of a half-wave antenna versus a quarter-wave. Now, this is not a portable mobile antenna, but just for those who haven't heard me mention it before, I use a Touchcraft R8 vertical, have it mounted 12 feet off the ground in my backyard. This is not a portable antenna. It's a permanent structure. Has 7 4-foot counterpoise radios. That's all it needs. Nothing magic about it, but it's very efficient because it's a half-wave antenna. It doesn't depend on quarter-wave ground radios. It works very, very well. I've checked into the Collins Net, which on 263, which meets every Sunday. Even without the amplifier, they have no trouble hearing me. If there's propagation, when the band's open, I can get into the Middle East. I have no complaints with a half-wave antenna. I was going to put up a beam, and then I decided I'm not really a DXer, so I scrapped the project, that and other reasons. But I'm quite happy with that Touchcraft R8 half-wave vertical. It's not well advertised. I think people just don't realize what it is. Go ahead, Dick.
That's a nice antenna. And the majority of hams who look at the data sheets, look at the advertisement, and look at the antenna manual, will come to the conclusion that all vertical antennas must be a fairly elaborate looking piece of hardware with a lot of aluminum to it and a bunch of loading coils and whatever. And because none of the books cover the subject of simple wire antennas in almost any way other than a horizontally polarized half-wave dipole or variations of it, loading coils, fan dipole, zigzag, and whatever, none of the books cover a wire half-wave vertical dipole. If you've got a tower, building, house, tree, or whatever that is tall enough that allows you to hang a vertical piece of wire one half wavelength long, strongly consider making a half wavelength of wire without an egg insulator in the center. There's nothing magic about feeding a dipole in the center. If you're smart enough, you can feed a dipole any position you want, all the way from the center, all the way out to the edge. And when you feed it at the very bottom edge of a half-wave dipole with the right kind of impedance step-up device, the one disadvantage of feeding the outer end of a dipole is it's now a 1,000-ohm impedance instead of a 72-ohm impedance. With a J-pole-like arrangement or a step-up coil, feeding the bottom of a half-wave dipole gives you about three advantages. Let me drop. One, a very simple hanging piece of vertical wire. Inexpensive. Two, its center of radiation is much higher above the ground than a quarter wave ground plane radial. Number three, it's got more gain than a quarter wave. Number four, it doesn't require ground plane radials. You can get away with almost nothing on the grounded end. It is the vertical equivalent of an end-fed ZEP antenna. The ZEP antenna was invented for the Zeppelin blimp, if you know what I mean. So end-feeding a half-wave dipole is a very respected thing to do. It was done in the 20s and 30s. And we've lost the recipe since then. And we think that an end-fed ZEP must be horizontally polarized. So vertically polarized, feed a vertically polarized one, as long as you've got the local support structure to hold it up, is a great way to go. And even if the local support structure is not tall enough for a full mechanical half wave, like it would have to be 120 foot high for 40 meters, it would have to be 32 feet high for 20 meters. It doesn't have to be that physical length. You can put in a loading coil or spirally wound it or whatever, and shrink down that vertical size mechanically by 2, 3, or 4 to 1 easily. It'll become a little bit more narrow band, but with a good antenna tuner, that's not a problem. So, a electronic half-wave vertical dipole. It doesn't appear in any of the simple antenna construction articles, and it's an antenna that really hasn't had its a fair deployment in the modern times. And way back in the 30s and 40s, we deployed the horizontal equivalent, and it was called end-fed ZEP. And no one was ever smart enough to make a vertically polarized end-fed ZEP. They should have. They would have had more energy on the horizon, higher gain, higher center of radiation, easier feeding arrangement, no ground plane requirements, just a slightly unusual impedance match because it's roughly 1,000 ohms. You and I have been saying this for some time, Mel. I think eventually somebody's going to go out and do it. It's going to catch on. You're doing it now with that vertical half-wave dipole made out of green wire that's in the evergreen tree in front of your house.
Repeater, time out.
That's one of the higher performance antennas you've ever owned, and very few amateurs you know have built anything like that. K2KEY, K2RIW.
Yes, and I used it on 30 meters, which really worked. I've seen phenomenal. I just can't begin to tell you that I one time considered, you know, more elaborate antennas for 30 meters, which is my favorite band. A very neglected to some extent band located between 40 and 20 meters. Many times it is excellent because it does come into more itself around sundown when 20 seems to be just about fading down on the current propagation and 40 is just about picking up somewhat. 30 is right there, combining the two to some extent. Of course, it's all CW, and I think that's what some of the discouraging part of why, you know, it's not really, I guess, hasn't got the popularity. And, of course, it's more or less a great band for QRP because it does have a power restriction of up to no more than 200 watts. So, anyhow, I can say the antenna I'm using for that is basically what you just described in the tree. It's suspended pulley I have up there and pull it up in the tree, and it just amazed me how it performed, Dick. Okay, want any more further words on this, or should we try one more?
A band that's not overcrowded, like the 30-meter band, 10 megacycles, and 250 watts of Morse code, my guess is that's got a lot of cutting capability. Give us a couple of words on what kind of DX you have heard on that particular band, Mel. Go ahead.
Okay, 30 meters, 10.100 to 10.150. Small band, what kind of DX? You name it. I have literally worked the world many a time over with on that. In fact, one of the most surprising contacts I used to make is with stations that was this guy, Jim Clancy. I've got several QSL cards just to confirm where he was when I worked it, because a lot of people say, aha, you're just making it up. I'm not. He was a person that was on the island of Diego Garcia, which is in the Indian Ocean. This is an island that is used by the United States under a contract with the United States to keep supplies, huge amounts of military supplies are on that island, and the freighters bring in and take out for different operations, you know, all over that area of the world. Let me let it drop. Okay, now Jim Clancy takes his portable radio, which was basically a 706 and a storage battery, and his antenna that he has, a portable antenna that he strings up in the palm tree. And on his day off, he gets a ride by some method or not, another from a small boat or whatever he's got there. And he goes to these different little islands at that time. He's now back in Florida, however. He's no longer situated there on Diego Garcia. And he goes to these different islands and operates. And a poor guy many a time would be calling CQ with an exotic call, and nobody come back to him. So I hear him, I come back and say, oh, how great I'm copying here in New York City, and sort of keep him company for a while to give you an idea of what happens on 30 meters over.
He was transported to that island, I guess, by way of a supply ship, and then he has to be transported some number of miles on the island to the actual radio station. Or it's his portable location. Give us a couple of words as to how he does that, Mel. Go ahead.
Okay, his primary operating position is on Diego Garcia in one of the buildings there. He has a nice antenna set up there on top of the building. When he's there at his, you know, primary location, he operates a lot of 20 meters and all. He's quite a DX, you know, attach with the VR, what the heck is it called? VU2JC. See that? JC. And then what he does on his day off, he takes this little launch, this little motorboat he's got, that he's got availability there, and goes to, there's a lot of neighboring small islands in that area of the Indian Ocean. And he takes along a storage battery, a regular lead-acid battery in his radio, and he goes to one of these little offshoot islands, sets up with a different, you know, authorized call he gets for whatever these fat holes and things are, and he operates for a while. He's not going on DX expeditions. He's just doing this, you know, at his spur of the moment when he has some time to go over.
So for the guys that are searching for 305 countries confirmed, he can supply by a rare island. Is that called Jata Islands on the Air, or Iota Islands on the Air? So that island he goes to, my guess is it's a fairly rare catch. Is that true?